check this out. This is Fresh Blood, the China Man, with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Blunt Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck D, Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Man.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfuckers.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Busy Paul.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Reddy Red.
What up, what up, what up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records, reveal the addition of rappers that are coming up, get them put on. We need to the platform to fight the mainstream. This is the show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow up with it.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics, and shadow design. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows. Plenty of content for you to get through. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real review.
Unstoppable, we beat, we fight our bitch, we represent. All them killers on the mic, and we should love to all your fans.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's curious for life, dog. Hip-hop ain't dead, represent for the legend. Rapping mumble rappers, so we sitting on the hip. Two pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's a murder master music show. Free the homie gangsta crow. I see these rappers on these streets, I got my job about to blow. Stay up on that raw shit, uncut street shit.
Keep it
up
forever, bitch, we coming hella strong. I see you feeding for the show, let's get the drum, let's get it.
Welcome to the Murder Master Music Show. This is episode 687. Man, we got one of the true pioneers, you know what I'm saying, from the H on the phone tonight. I'm talking about, you know what I'm saying, DJ Vicious Lee of the Def Four. Now, 1988 was a huge year for Rap-A-Lot, because prior to 88, Rap-A-Lot was, you know what I'm saying, starting to put the pieces of the puzzle together. You know, they dropped a couple singles, you know what I'm saying, trying to get different things in order and whatnot. But 88 was a huge year because they dropped 4 albums. You know, they had the Vigilante by Raheem, who was originally part of the Ghetto Boys. You know what I'm saying, he was on the Car Freak song. Then you had the Ghetto Boys Making Trouble, you know what I'm saying. Then you had Def Four, Royal Flush, you know what I'm saying, to round it off. I don't know exactly the order. I know Making Trouble dropped in February of 88. It was pretty much recorded in 87. But those 4 albums, man, came out in 88 to really jumpstart the whole Rap-A-Lot movement. And our guest tonight was part of that, you know what I'm saying. He was there early on, got to see, you know what I'm saying, the magic of DJ Reddy Red, rest in peace. You got to see what Bushwick Bill was doing, you know what I'm saying, the incredible mastermind set of James Prince, you know. So a whole lot to talk about tonight. I'm going to bring on our guest, the one and only DJ Vicious Lee right now. Vicious Lee, how you doing, brother?
I am good, brother. How are you?
Man, I am doing good under these crazy circumstances. I never thought we'd see this. You know what I'm saying? From your perspective, what's it been like for you and yours during this whole, you know what I'm saying, coronavirus outbreak?
Man, it's been crazy. Right now, I'm an audio engineer at the House of Blues. So as of May 15th, we've been shut down. There are no concerts. Yeah. No gatherings of any kind, and it's been kind of rough. But my wife is an essential employee, and so is my daughter, and they've been going to work diligently and protecting themselves and coming back home safe. So it's just been a blessing, man, to have gotten through this far.
Yeah, it is. And you said that your wife and daughter are essential workers. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be a sense of relief, you know what I'm saying, knowing that the income is coming in, but also got to be a fear knowing that they're amongst this shit every single day.
Right.
How do you guys cope with that?
Well, it's all about the social distancing and We all have N95 masks, and my daughter works at a hospital, and my wife works for government, so they kind of made sure that they were okay, and in the positions that they're in, they're pretty much isolated from the real blood and guts of all of this, but they're still out there doing their jobs every day. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? My hats are off to them, you know, and yourself too, you know, you saying the House of Blues that really affected you, you know what I'm saying? Hopefully, you know, things can get back together, you know, sooner than later. But you yourself, Vicious Lee, you got a huge history in the rap game, man. Let's take it all the way back prior to Rap-A-Lot. You know what I'm saying? When did you catch the bug, you know what I'm saying, for hip-hop? And, you know what I'm saying, at what age were you, man? And what was going on? Who were some of your influences?
Wow.
Break it all down.
We're talking, you're going to make me date myself. Man. All right, 1973, I had an uncle who was a DJ in Brooklyn, New York. And when he passed away, I got his equipment. And that kind of started the hip-hop bug because he was like a club DJ in like a for like older, you know, the older crowd at that point in time. So the records that he had were amazing. And when rap started to come about at the end of the 70s, 78, 79, we had all the records that everybody wanted to use to try to rap over. There were no samplers and computers to splice and chop, so it was all about having two copies of a record. And if it took 2 to 3 DJs to do it, we would play the song off of the breaks and make a new composition out of several different breaks. And that's kind of where it started. So we're talking 73 to 79.
73 to 79. So this is right, you know what I'm saying, is hip-hop was, I mean, you really picked up the bug early.
Yes.
And where were you? Were you down in Houston, you said, at this time? Or?
No, I was in Brooklyn, New York at the time.
Oh,
and then
okay,
moved to Philadelphia.
Oh, right. Shit.
I was born in Brooklyn.
So you're...
And then
you're there, you know what I'm saying? This is pre-Schoolie D,
yes.
Who influenced the likes of Ice-T to do what he does. You
yeah.
got to see so much of this stuff. You know, at what time period did you touch down in Houston?
86, August.
86, so this was before Ready Red was down there.
Right. We were DJing at a club called Flame. My brother and I, and DJ
okay.
Lonnie Mack. And rest in peace, DJ Lonnie Mack, too. And Red came in with, like, this Daniel Boone raccoon hat on and a leather jacket with King Funk Disco on the back, spray painted on the back of his jacket. Well, we knew he wasn't from Houston at that point, so... He kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. And we kind of hit it off from there. And, you know, it's just been, until my man passed away, it's been all love. But, yeah, I watched Red walk into the club and him and Bushwick Bill.
Oh, wow. So they always talk about the Rhinestone Wrangler. This is a different club then.
Right. It's just called a club called Flames on the southwest side on Gessner and Bel Air.
So you see Ready Red straight from Trenton come in there and
yep.
Bushwick Bill straight from, you know what I'm saying, New York come in there. Man,
mm-hmm.
they had to have been pretty much kids. Man, did you know what
yeah.
kind of talent Red and Bill had at that time?
No, not at the time. I knew Bill could dance because the first thing Bill once did was got up on the dance floor and started dancing. But Red being the consummate DJ that he is, came to the DJ booth. And it's just it's kind of an unwritten thing in being a DJ. To me, DJs don't dance, but I've known some DJs that can dance. But we're all about checking out how the floor is moving to what's being played. So Red came to the booth to see who was spinning, and that's how we met.
Yeah.
He was actually very instrumental in most of the songs on the Death 4 album as far as the concepts went. Red was there for the demo making. He was one of the three DJs taking breaks because we didn't have a sampler. There was no such thing as a sampler yet. Or if there was, we didn't know about it or had access to one. So three DJs played what we needed played to convey what we were trying to convey musically while Eat Prince EDC rapped over it.
Oh. Wow.
From the bathroom in the shower. That's how we
now
did our demo tape.
As a DJ yourself, was there competition amongst you and Red? Or were you guys kind of feeding off of each other? Did you hit it off? I mean, what was
no,
it like?
No, we would. Yeah, we would. It was. From day one with Red, it was all love. All love from the beginning. He was like my other brother. He came in and he was just like another brother.
Yeah, hell yeah. The foundation, I mean, this is the foundation behind the sound of Rap-A-Lot.
Right.
At what point in time, now the Def 4 consisted of you. Who were the other three members?
DJ Lonnie Mack, my brother DJ John B, and Prince EDC was rapping.
Okay.
And DJing too. He was also a DJ.
So you got
He's
all
now
these
DJ
guys.
Peter Parker.
It's pretty much a DJ crew.
That's what it was. It was a DJ crew with one guy that got out there and rapped. Lonnie Mack would get out there and kind of hype man with him, which left me on the beat machine and my brother DJ John B doing cuts while Mac and C were feeding off each other.
Now, at what point in time did you meet Jay Prince, and what was your perception of him at that young of an age?
It was crazy. Jay was like, he was like this really cool young boy. I'm like, okay, he believe in us. You know, he heard a song that we were doing, which is how Red got to be the producer for them. We had been working on a song called Outlaw, and Red had done the beat on his 909. And when we took it up there and Jay played it in one of his cars, it hit so hard, he was like, yo. And that's how him and Red kind of was like, yo, I kind of need you to do this for the Ghetto Boys. If you can do this, you know, with them. And at that point, we were stocked full of DJs, and Red needed that move. So, you know, with our blessing, he went and became Ghetto Boy.
So, yeah. And you know what I'm saying? Now, Jay Prince, everyone talks about, you know, the respect. You know, he wrote the book Respect, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
A lot of people fear Jay Prince. Did he have that at that young of an age, that persona? Or did that develop over time?
It had to have developed over time because. Not that he's changed, Jimmy. He's still Jay Prince. He's always gonna be Jay Prince. But I guess he's still. It was pretty much the same. He was the same guy. He's just older and wiser now.
Yeah, definitely. But he had a sharp business mind, I imagine.
Oh man. As far as business mind and the willingness to get behind, you know, other black people just was, you know, you didn't see that a lot. There wasn't any other place really that was doing it like that.
Yeah,
that was that was impressive in itself. To, for a guy so young, because he was young, you know, he's younger than I am. I'm a lot older. But, but, yeah, he's always been the same. He always had that respect, and, you know, if you respected him, he respected you. It was always a two-way street. It was never, I don't want to say that I ever felt fear of Jay. There was a respect for him. And I don't know. I would hope to think that, you know, he didn't have anything to fear from me. I had nothing but love for him. Still do.
Yeah. Did you,
I tried to get to him at the Zero Show.
Stay in touch with him, or?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Do you stay in touch with him, or?
I tried to catch him at the Zero's birthday party, but I was doing front of house, and Jay was on the stage, so I didn't get a chance to get up there before he left. But I've just been back in Houston for just a year. I've just been back here for a year.
Fresh back. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm fresh back. And when I say it, like a year and 2 days today. It's been a year and 2 days. Moved down here on the 19th of April last year.
Now this, you know, at this time, you know, like I said at the beginning in 88, you had 4 albums drop on Rap-A-Lot that year. Did you guys go out and hit the road at all or do any touring or anything like that?
We did some minor stuff. Ghetto Boys did more touring than we did. We did do a couple shows in Tennessee and a couple shows in Louisiana. But it was there really weren't a lot of places to do shows at that point. If a tour didn't come in town, they really weren't, unless we did them at the like the Rhinestone or Thunderdome, the clubs that were around there that had a big enough stage, you know, to perform on, is where the shows happened at. And if somebody came to town to a club, the most you could do was really open up for somebody. We opened up for D-Nice, Chub Rock, 357. Yes, I mean, we did Homecoming 1988 at TSU. That was everybody. Oh, Rap-A-Lot, I see that, yeah.
Yeah, now that, you know what I'm saying, at that particular time, you know, you had the Royal Flush, you know, with, you know, Born Twice.
Right.
You know, a whole roster of talent, you know, were you there when Scarface and Willie D came on the scene, or were you out of there at that time?
Yeah. No, I was still there. I was working for a company called BPM Productions, which was owned by Doug King, Doug Digital King. And he's also the producer of record on our album, on the Death 4 album. You'll see Doug King's name on the back.
Yeah, legendary.
Yeah. So Doug had a studio, and him and Born Twice, B2, had the studio together. I had come back from, I was visiting in New York in 1990, and Born Twice was looking for me to run the studio, to be the engineer in the studio. So I get back to Houston, and we hook up. I get into BPM. They start running all the artists kind of through there. That's how I ended up doing Nip. Nip was done at BPM. Well, some of Nip stuff was done to DPM, along with Dopey, and I think Storm might have been in there. John Beto, of course. So all these, you know, I'm basically the engineer of the studio. That, you know, people coming in and they cranking the stuff out, and then they taking it and doing it over on 24 track. When Willie and Faith joined the Ghetto Boys and the We Can't Be Stopped album came out, they had booked, Jay had booked the BPM production studio to do the pre-production work for the album. I'm still working there at this. So I'm the engineer of record, but then they took it in the back and dumped it to 24 track. But as far as all of the pre-production stuff was done in the little house in the front, it's the same building that was used in the video where Scarface is and they're counting the money, the little bedroom. That's actually the studio,
oh, yeah.
The kitchen. All of that was actually BPM studio.
Wow.
Which they booked a 100-hour block to do the We Can't Be Stopped album. And we did it in 70 hours. Or they were ready to
wow.
go in the back. I don't remember
that's
the
it.
Name of the studio that was up there.
This is We Can't Be Stopped. Now Red, before he left, he did a lot of work on that album, didn't he?
Yeah, Red was there too. Red was there in that context. He wasn't always at BPM, but he was there for the Ghetto Boys stuff.
Yeah. Oh man.
I mean, we had all kinds of people. We were basically a commercial studio. That was pretty much the only people doing hip hop in Houston at the time. So a lot of people that, you know, that just came and booked 3 hours and left with a cassette tape of them rapping over a beat that we just created, you know, sample some stuff up real quick and chop, chop this, boom, boom, throw some 808s in, and you got your own track that, you know, you just made up and you get to hear your voice on it. We were selling out hours. But then, you know, then the other stuff would come. Oh, yeah, man. I've seen the early people, a lot of folks came through BPM production. I don't even want to tell some people that when they were a little girl, they came in there and sung when we was over at Big 40. I ain't going to mention no name. Someone might get me.
When you mentioned Nip, I believe you did Slaughter.
Yeah. Right.
Which is one of the most brutal. I mean, you had Fuck the Police out there, Gangsta Pad had Shooting on Narcs. But this was by far the most brutal anti-police
Slaughter was like.
Ever. What was your thoughts of that? And,
man.
You know what I'm saying? What were your overall thoughts on Nip as an artist?
Nip is one of the most creative dudes that I've ever worked with. And just the way his mind kind of works. Because we did a couple of sessions. We didn't just do Slaughter. We did a couple of other songs. But it, like I said, it was mostly all pre-production stuff. The stuff that ended up on the album got recorded somewhere else.
Yeah, Dopey.
But as far as building the drum, you're right. He did it at BPM, too. He came in with Nip. And they're like, okay, we got this little drum beat. We want to put this sample, and this sample in. We go to the archives, pull up a record, bam, bam, sample it up, and run it. And then we can transfer all of that stuff over to the big studio whenever it comes time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I mean, did you know at that time that you were part of history? Because, you know, all this stuff, you know, We Can't Be Stopped, you know, Gangsta Nip, all this stuff blew up and it's timeless music to this day. Did you know it was going to be that big?
I know. I knew something was going to happen with Nip, because, and I knew, I'm going to tell you, I knew the Together Boys album was going to go platinum. Me and Jay was at a club one night, at the same club one night. We weren't there together, but we were together at the club. And we were standing there, and I think Willie D was performing. And he said, "What do you want me to put on your gold record, Vicious Loop?" And I said, "I don't want a gold one." He said, "What do you mean you don't want a gold one?" I said, "I want the platinum one when it come out." He said, "Do you think it's going to go platinum?" I said, "Yeah, Jay, it's going platinum." He said, "You really think that?" I said, "Yes, sir."
So Jay didn't know, he didn't know that We Can't Be Stopped would make it that far. As far as record sales,
I think they were just about to hit gold or had hit gold, and he was getting the people who he wanted to give the gold records to.
Yeah.
I told him, "I don't want a gold one." I said, "I want a platinum one when they come out." And he's like, "You think it's gonna go platinum?" I mean, we were just chilling at the club, you know. And he was like, I said, yeah.
But it was already gold or on its way to it. It was already,
I think it was on its way to it or already gold. But he was, you know, collecting names for the people that he was going to give gold records to. Once it got certified. I told him I didn't want one until they went platinum. So I don't have a gold one, but I do have a platinum one.
That's
a lot of people got gold ones. A lot of people stuck out for the gold, you know.
I've seen Nip got both. He posted a picture of both of them. So that was pretty dope that you guys were able to share in that success, because you don't usually hear about the guys behind the scenes. You know what I'm saying? You just hear about Bushwick Bill and Face. But it's good to hear the story of the guys behind the scenes. Now back to Nip, when you first heard him rap, like the gore and the horror movie type stuff, that was so original. Mm-hmm. Nobody was doing it at that time.
Right, nobody was doing it.
What were your thoughts about that style?
It was like, and what was going on at Rap-A-Lot at that point was, all right, the Ghetto Boys had established a gangster rap kind of vibe. So then a group called Too Much Trouble came out, the baby Ghetto Boys, who were supposed to be 10 times worse, you know? So now here comes Nip. And so Nip is like, Jay looking for me to outdo, I got to outdo the last thing. So he went in somewhere and came out as Gangsta Nip. And, it was an amazing thing to see it, like, transpire. To go for, like, if you talk to him, you know, if you're just talking to him in a regular conversation, and then he's like, "I'm going to go get on mic." And then he becomes Gangsta Nip. It's an amazing thing to see and to hear. But, yeah, I was like, man, this is like some horror movie shit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was so, when I heard it, I was just shocked. I was like, "Wow, this is amazing." As a kid, because I was like in sixth grade or something like that, and I was like, "Holy shit, this is
man,
real. This
that,
is like
that,
Faces of Death on wax." You know,
was that traumatizing? I mean,
it wasn't traumatizing. It was because I heard Two Live Crew, like I heard shocking stuff before this. You know. But
this was like
Freddy Krueger on wax, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Putting Leatherface on wax. You never heard that before. Now, there was Isham up in Detroit who was like kind of like on a more demonic exorcist type stuff. But Nip was just straight cannibalization. You know what I mean?
Right. Somebody's fingers red hot.
Yeah. You cut off your fingers and make them red hot. And, you know, woke up with a dead dog on me, baloney. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it was genius because the way he would make that stuff rhyme
through a brick, broke a window
in Tokyo. I mean, you know, that shit was genius, man. But. So you knew Nip was going to go somewhere with that then, huh?
Yeah, because he wrote the next level of the game. Like I said, it was all about taking it, trying to see how far you could push the envelope.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Ghetto Boys pushed the envelope to a point.
I can imagine what Dionne Warwick or C. Dolores Tucker, Tipper Gore, I can imagine what their faces were when they heard Nip. You know, it's like they get done bashing Snoop Dogg or Dr. Dre or something, and then they hear Nip, man.
I don't think they messed with Nip because he wasn't so much about... Yeah. They'll find your arm behind Walgreens.
We had him on the show with DJ Paul. We were doing a roundtable, and DJ Paul, 36 Mafia. Nip was talking about, you know, say he's got kids, he's got daughters, and DJ Paul's like, "You got a daughter? You got a child?" Like he couldn't believe. Because Nip had this persona about him, like you thought this guy was like a Leatherface. The Leatherface of rap.
Yeah.
You know, the real Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Chainsaw Massacre killer, huh?
Yeah. He definitely, well, you know, I'm glad he's getting his props because you know, a lot of people don't give him props. They talk about the grave diggers or the flatliners or, you know, other groups and artists where they should be talking about him because he was before them. But yeah, that's dope, man. So much talent you work with. We're going to go to a break right now. I'm going to play a song. Then I'm going to come back and we'll turn over the show to my brother Sinister from France because I know he's got some questions for you. But dope as hell talking to you. This is the song right here, man. This is the Mo City Posse. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to the Mo City's Don Zero. But tell us about this one, Mo City Posse, man.
What song is it?
It's called the Mo City Posse.
And who's it by?
Let me bring on Sin. Sin, Mo City Posse, brother.
Hi.
Hey.
Yeah, it was hi. Hi, Mr. Lee, Scott. Yes, it was about the H-Town sound. It was your own production, right?
I've worked with a group called the Mo City Posse.
H-Town straight for the underground.
Right. Oh,
it
man.
It was 1988.
Yes. That's one of my best friends. Run-D is one of my best friends. I talked to him this morning.
Oh, shout out to Run-D.
Mo City Posse was one of the more consistent people to come through BPM as far as coming in and getting production done. But me and Run-D have been like best of friends for the last 30 years.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I was down his house for barbecue last week. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. I was supposed to be quarantined.
Oh, yeah.
But I had my mask on, and it was a drive-by pickup. of barbecue. My man Run D got the best barbecue in Texas, I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, hey, you know what's crazy? I mean, we're joking and talking about masks, but I'll tell you a story real quick before we go to the song. My daughter was on Facebook, and she saw this post that says, I need masks. Does anybody know how to make one? And she got on YouTube and saw how to make one, right? And she started making them.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's working 12 hours a day, can't keep up filling orders. I mean, she's made about $1,000 making these fucking masks.
Wow.
In the last week.
Yeah,
alone.
Man.
So,
it's
you
crazy.
Know.
People are doing it all over the place. She's not alone in that.
Yeah.
And
no, yeah, that's why she went straight to YouTube. You know, and then I was like, yeah, that's hustle economics right there, 101. Get your paper.
Yes, it is.
You know, uh-huh. I raised you right. That's definitely true. But we'll be right back with DJ Vicious Lee right here on the Murder Master Music Show. Don't go nowhere.
Now we on the level living large. Don't sweat us, yeah.
back right here, Murder Master Music Show, episode 687 with DJ Vicious Lee, you know what I'm saying, of the Def Four. Got that old,
wow.
old Don't Fight the Feeling beat, man, that Shorty's
wow.
that sample too. Classic right there.
Man, I haven't heard that song in 30 years.
Man, that's wild. Yeah, and you helped pioneer, you know what I'm saying, that Houston, man. You're one of the unsung pioneers, brother. Huge honor to have you on here, man, speaking about what you did for the city.
Say it again? I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying it's a huge honor to have you on here speaking about what you've done for the city of Houston. But we got the homie.
I appreciate the chance.
DJ Lord Sinister mm-hmm. from France. I'm going to turn it over to him. I know he's got some questions for you. You got the floor, Sin.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember Muddy City Posse were from Missouri City in Texas, too.
Very good friend of mine.
I will fight this song because it was Akero G. It was going to fight it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can you tell us about how you grew up, how it was to grow up in Brooklyn? I know SC was from Brooklyn. Did you John B also were from Brooklyn for Death Row? So how it was for you to grow up over there? You at a young age.
It was, you know, Brooklyn was Brooklyn in the '70s. It was. They still were doing, you know, block parties. Everybody was, you know, people would come out and play music. And outside, and a party would just start, you know. So music was always around. But my brother and I, you know, we'd go around town. We would, little amateur DJs. My stepfather is a DJ down here in Houston, also Dr. Freddie Brown. Been on KTSU almost 40 years, college radio station down here for Texas Southern University. But so we've always been around DJs. It's always been a DJ thing. I had an uncle who was a DJ. I ended up with his equipment at some point at a young age, and it just kind of went from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also when you read from, was from Trenton, too.
Of course, from Trenton.
Where did you met Reggie Red sign?
We met Ready Red at a club called Flames on the southwest side of Houston, which is
mm-hmm.
on Bel Air and Gessner on the corner. It was a club way back in the 80s, early 90s, called Flames. And that's where we met him. He walked in and he stuck out like a sore thumb. And he came over to the DJ booth, and we just started talking, and the rest is musical history and family history. We've been around each other for years up until the time he passed.
And so,
he was in Jersey and I was in North Carolina.
Okay. And at this time, You were a few groups from Rapalot to be on the East Coast, like Royal Flush and you, therefore,
right.
I trust
mm-hmm.
to deal with it. And how was your reception from New York Heads? I know you were respected in New York for Death Row stuff and Royal Flush stuff. Even if it's come to Rapalot, because Rapalot is very known for Texas stuff, but you was very known
right.
for East Coast stuff. How it was the perception for New York Heads?
It was kind of weird. Prez asked me earlier about Jay Prince. Jay Prince wanted to put Fifth Ward on the map.
Yeah.
And that's what it was about. Even though all of us were from the East Coast, we were all committed to representing Houston and Fifth Ward as a group and a company. But our roots were all still East Coast, so we all probably sounded East Coast. We all had connections on the East Coast, but, you know, when you're trying to establish something and you want to do it your way, you do it your way, and that's the way Jay wanted to do it. He didn't want New York's help. He wanted to make Rap-A-Lot a household name off of making Rap-A-Lot a household name from Texas. So it wasn't about, oh, we got to get New York or we got to get L.A. It was about making Houston a musical mecca like New York, like L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So from a record label standpoint, they really weren't looking to New York for validation. They weren't considering themselves making music for New York, even though a lot of the stuff got over in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought you were supposed to be in New York and going to school at the Institute of Audio Research in New York. And then you join BPM, in fact, in Houston, because B2 was affiliated with Royal Flush at this time.
Yep.
And you mm-hmm. worked for BPM, and at first you were supposed to stay in New York. So how it was
I was supposed to go to the Institute of Audio Research. You're absolutely right. And mm-hmm. I came back to Houston basically just to tie some loose ends up before I went back to go to school. But I never went back because I got the job in the studio.
Yes, sir.
And
tell us about... Go ahead.
Oh, and, you know, I'm saying the rest, it sounds like you know the history.
Yeah, tell us about one day whether you was in the studio in BPM when Gangsta Nip, John Biddle, Lord 3-2, rest in peace, of the Convicts was there. And you got Rahim and B2 on the same place. And in fact, Rahim put a song of B2, of a diss of B2, and it's happened to the studio uptown. It was crazy because B2 slammed Rahim. And, can you tell us about this story?
Yeah.
It was crazy shit.
Well, you just told that. That's pretty much what happened. You know, both of them are still very, very, very good friends of mine. I never understood. And right now, they're okay with each other. Like,
all
of that.
Yeah, now they're cool.
But in those days, you know, rap was taken very seriously, and everybody that was rapping took their stuff seriously. There were just some things you didn't say, and, you know, if you're going to diss somebody, you diss somebody, but there's just some words you don't use unless you want some trouble, and that's kind of what happened. I try not to talk about that incident, but you kind of laid it out pretty much how it went. It was an interesting day. They almost went into Doug's office through the wall in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But, they stopped on just one side of the sheetrock. Knocked all the records mm-hmm. on the floor. It was just a mess. It wasn't a pretty sight. It's not one of my greatest memories of stuff in the studio. But it was memorable. I cannot say it was not memorable. It
was crazy because B2 slapped Rahim and pointed a gun to B2, and B2 put him in the pocket, and finally he shoot Rahim on the leg.
He didn't shoot him in the leg. He didn't shoot him in the leg. There was a gun involved. And it went off. in someone's pocket. And
yeah,
that's how they got shot. Okay.
Yeah. To him, yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't a aimed shot at somebody's leg, no.
I believe Bourne twice said that they are they're friends today now.
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
Cool.
I talked to all of them. It's so weird y'all bringing up. I talked to B2 2-3 days ago, and I talked to Raheem whenever I can catch him. But I always talk to Shaquem, so that's like talking to Raheem.
Yeah.
That's like Raheem's mother's birthday was either I think today. Shout out Raheem's mom, Miss Serez. Go, Ma.
Happy birthday. Shout out to Raheem and shout out to Bourne twice. Legends.
Yes, yeah, they're friends now. They were 30 years ago. Wow, that seemed like it was that long ago, but God, that was 30 years ago. Yeah, I talked to Bourne twice, 2-3 times a week.
Mm-hmm. And did you produce also for Lottery too at this time? He was in the studio too?
No. 3-2 wasn't doing anything at BPM. I don't know where he was recording at. I'm not sure where the convicts recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless Doug came in and did them, you know, when I wasn't there. Because Doug was still quite capable of producing stuff, and I know his name is still on a bunch of stuff, so.
Yeah. And you did also the entire pre-production of We Can't Be Stopped, but at this time you was uncredited.
Yeah.
It's crazy how it happened.
The pre-production for the only song
We Can't Be Stopped.
Right. That's what I got the platinum record for, was for the pre-production of We Cannot Be Stopped, the Ghetto Boys. Yeah, that was, it just came as, you know, they booked the studio out for 100 hours. I was the operating engineer. And we got in there and knocked the album out in 70 hours. And the rest is platinum history.
Yeah. So we would go on the song of Therefore Get Busy. It was a classic, 1988. Can you tell us about this one and how you produced it and how it was to do it?
Okay.
Song.
Get Busy was actually produced by DJ Wiz. DJ Big Wiz.
Okay.
Shout out to DJ Big Wiz. Like I said, we were a team. We all, if you look on the back of our album, it says produced by Def Four, co-produced by Def Four, which was the entire group. And Wiz was kind of a behind-the-scenes member of the group. He wasn't signed to the label, but he was still part of the group. And once we left Rap-A-Lot, he actually became a label-based member of the group. But yeah, DJ Wiz actually produced that on the SP-12. And when I say that, not a 1200, a SP-12.
Okay.
The one with 2.5 seconds of sample time. And that song is called Get Busy, and Wiz got busy.
Yeah.
I applaud him for that song every time I hear it.
That's so. So we got the song. Well, go ahead.
You got it?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was saying, I was using the MPC 60, which had 13 seconds. So, you know, my amazement at 2.5. And he dropped it, and it was really the only single that came off the album.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only drop single. We didn't drop another single from the album, except Get Busy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we go on the song, and I don't go to where we back.
All righty.
All righty.
The deaf poor would like the people of the world to know that we oppose the use of drugs. And we totally advocate dancing, having fun, and enjoying life. Would you join us now as we get ready to totally
get busy?
Jazz and calypso, reggae, zydeco, the blues, yo, rock, pop, or funk, hip-hop, just throw on the dancing shoes and get busy.
Back here, Murder Master Music Show. Episode 687. What a show, man. We're going to close it out. I'm going to bring back on DJ Vicious Lee of the Dep 4. Man, thank you so much, DJ Vicious Lee, for coming on the show and chopping it up about all this dope history and knowledge that goes all the way back to the East Coast in the 70s, man. Such longevity.
You're welcome, brother.
Do you have anything coming out
and
in the
thank
future?
Thank you for the platform, man. You
know. Oh, anytime, man. Anytime.
If you've got connections with the right people, you'll be hearing more from me, from people that you already know. That's all
that's
I can say.
That's what's up. That's
okay.
What's up, man. I'm looking
right.
forward to it. And anytime you you drop or do anything or want to come on and just chop it up, always welcome, always an honor. Be safe.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
You
too, man. Y'all stay safe and stay healthy.
Yeah, definitely. But before we do get out of here, man, if anybody wants to get at you for production or anything, what's the best way they can reach you?
Let's see. I guess best shot would be The Heat Productions, Gold Rush Entertainment on Facebook. It's DAHEAT Productions/Gold Rush Entertainment@ on Facebook, and you can get to me through there.
Definitely. I encourage anybody, you know what I'm saying, that's putting together any projects, reach out to cats like DJ Vicious Lee, because they're making dope stuff, and they got so much experience and knowledge, they'll make your project that much better. Man, you take care of yourself,
brother.
I will, sir. Be safe during these crazy times. And chop it up. We'll chop it up real soon. That was DJ Vicious Lee, you know what I'm saying, the Def 4, one of the earlier pioneers, you know what I'm saying, in the Houston music scene. By way of the East Coast, man, that's a dope thing. Some of the architects of the South were from the East. Same thing with Two Live Crew. You know, Miami, you had Mr. Mix from California, and you had Fresh Kid Ice, you know what I'm saying, from the East Coast. You know, Brother Marquise from Rochester, New York. You know, you have all these guys, you know, and most of the time they don't get the credit. You know, they came in and helped areas that were having problems, you know what I'm saying, with their identity at the time, finding their sounds, finding their fan bases, and finding their markets, you know, and these unsung cats, you know, came to these various labels, and they contributed greatly. You know, rest in peace, DJ Ready Red, rest in peace, Bushwick Bill. Shout out to, you know what I'm saying, all the Rap Lot, you know what I'm saying, artists and affiliated people we've had on the show over the years. We're going to continue to do more shows like that for sure. You know, we're all about Rap-A-Lot, Ruthless, you know, Luke Records, Death Row, of course. We're going to continue to do that. So just keep messing with us, UGSForLife.com. We're going to get out of here with a hell of a track by the one and only Gangsta Nip. You know, sounds by, of course, DJ Vicious Lee. This is Slaughter off the classic album, The South Park Cycle. I still got my CD. You know, if you want one, you're gonna have to pay about $100 for it on eBay or more. They're so rare, they need to repress them. But this is Slaughter, Gangsta Nip. You know what I'm saying? We're out of here. Shout out to DJ Vicious Lee, Def 4. We'll see you guys real soon. Murder Master Music Show, UGSForLife.com.
Yo, check this out. This report just in. Gangsta Nip, known to the world as the most violent, insane executioner, is running wild through the city streets of Houston. Ladies and gentlemen, he's definitely a psycho case. He's the money. In the last past hour, we've estimated 26 slaughtering deaths. His main focus seems to be crooked cops. Police officers are being killed in the line of duty. The question is, can he be stopped? If so, who gon' do it? A cop slapped my mama, so I had to get me. They found his leg in his car. They found his head behind.
got to fuck with me. But you did, motherfucker. Now this means war. Get the cop while he ain't looking and piss in his car. When he come running, I'ma act like I'm scared. Let his ass get close enough and just some scissors in his fucking head. I got the hollow points to load up the gas. If you want a dead cop, look underneath in the yellow page. Sweeping body parts under the rug. Cut the meat out of cop's head. Now that's full of mud. A cop got a nine, I got a nine, so it says. I took his nine, now there's 18 cops dead. A cop killer is my point understood. I bought none, I got a gun, so I can start it in pepper wood. Talking shit, cops know I ain't with it. They'll find a cat in your neck with a nose that their nips did explore. Dedicated to Rodney King, Otta Delaney, and my homeboy Lil Mud. And they say, cops supposed to help,